holding position on the member stand side. Oh,
it's always great when we catch up with a man who's made such a great contribution to the game for Vic Metro Super Rules, Footy for Fun. Doug Barwick, of course, I'm sure most of you have worked out who was the guest based on the clues we gave away. He's our guest today. Douglas, thanks for coming in and spending some time with us. Lovely to see you.
Thanks for the invitation.
And all of those things. Do you miss any of them? All the locks? Do you look back at the photos and go, gee, they were the good old days?
You don't get caught up in things you can't control then.
That's a very good point. Where should we start? We'll start right from the... Go back to the Tassie days when you came... I think you came over and played your first VFL game at about 21 or 22. Can you remember your very first contact? Who was the first one who knocked on your door and said we'd be interested in getting you across to Fitzroy?
There was one of the old Fitzroy greats, Kevin Wright. Mm. He used to float into York Park every second week and take pies and pasties and sausage rolls around to Mum and Dad, who used to sit on the wing at York Park, Aurora Stadium. And I used to go and say, Mum, was that Kev Wright? And say, yeah, he was here. Anything he wanted? Oh, no. And, you know, the approach back then was to get to know the family, get to know the boy, and then you got your man.
So. I might just get you to get... You know, I know you like staying away from halfback flankers. I'll get you to get a little bit closer to that microphone. So how long was he doing this for? How long were the approaches sort of forthcoming?
A couple of years.
For 2 years?
Yeah, a couple of years he was around.
Why were you resisting?
The first year I just missed out. They took up a couple of other players, and then end of 83 I got picked up in the draft and made the move to Melbourne and has been here since.
So it was a really exciting time for Fitzroy, that period. I mean, 1983, they probably, well, some people would argue, should have won the premiership. For people that don't remember, you know, pipped by Hawthorn in the qualifying final and belted by the Bombers in the first semi. So you would have gone over there knowing, funnily enough, given Fitzroy's subsequent history, but you were going to a pretty strong club, on field at least.
Oh, it was a fantastic experience to get to Fitzroy. I mean, you walk through the door and Bernie Quinlan, Flea Wilson, you know, Mickey Conlon, you know, as your established players. And then you had such a good bunch of kids, you know, the Osborne boys, Purdy, Bruzy. I mean, we had a great list. We just didn't have a whole lot else.
Well, nah, so what was what was that like? What were you, when you got there, and particularly once you finish your career at a club like Collingwood, so you can look back at what you didn't have as a competitor to Collingwood, how bereft was the footy club?
I mean, the Junction years were the start of the end, really. Our third year at the Junction, we headed to Northcote Park as our home base.
Is that right?
Yep. We shared Vic Park, Waverley Park, and we had three training bases throughout the week. So you get to training and half the blokes wouldn't be there because they forgot which ground they were supposed to be at. So we become gypsies in the end, which was a really sad finish.
So 84, they were still very competitive. I remember, didn't have a great season, but flying finish made the final five. Yep. And then... So 84 was the last year at the Junction, wasn't it? Then they started playing home games at Victoria Park. Robert Wall's coaching, though, and everyone talks about Wallsy being such an innovator and the huddle. And give us a few insight into what it was like to play under Robert Walls.
Well, I think the first of anything special, I mean, your first training session, league club, your first game, your first league coach, and Robert was all those things. Tough, brutal man when you crossed him, you know, just such an educator in the game, and a lot of the things he brought to the game, you know, are still in play now. So love Wolsey, and you know, I can remember the first game, Cadinia Park, first round 1984. Greg Williams had 40 possessions for Geelong, first game there. Mark Jackson kicked 7, his first game there. There was a guy on the wing that I played against, Gary Ablett, kicked 5 and 35 possessions.
Oh, is that right?
It was some sort of introduction to the game.
Yeah, well, it was I'm pretty sure. Oh yeah, Tom Hafey was coaching Geelong, but the Geelong centre line that day would have been Ablett, Williams, and Mick Turner. Not
correct,
bad.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you're playing in this team of young, in a lot of cases, young, athletic, you know, athletically gifted footballers, and some veterans like Bernie, who you're talking about, who was a athletic freak. When you get back into the rooms at the end of that game and you reminisce now, you played on. Were you struck by, even though you're surrounded, you were a great specimen yourself, you were explosive. Were you struck by, gee, this bloke's he's pretty special in all of those areas?
I was in a coma for a week. I was so tired after that game.
Right.
It took me about 4 days to recover. But there was just, I'd heard about Gary Ablett.
Mm.
But I had no idea that he was 6'2", 105 kilos,
yeah, yep.
Could run like the wind and hit like a tank.
Mm. Well, I can remember he... It seems weird now, but he sort of snuck up on people, Gary Ablett, because he'd had the six games at Hawthorn in 82, went and played for Myrtleford for a year. So he starts at Geelong in 84, plays good footy, got picked for Victoria. Victoria played WA after about eight games over at Subiaco, and it was one of those Tuesday midweek games.
Yeah.
I can remember being in the office at, here's the story insertion coming up. I can remember being in the office at the Sun, and we're all standing around the TV watching the game. And people are going, who's this guy Ablett? And I think they thought it was Jeff Ablett or Kevin
right.
Ablett. Like, no one still knew much about him. Yeah. And Ablett in that game, I think, kicked six or seven from a half forward flank.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So, yeah, just what a freak he was.
Just in terms of impact, I don't think anybody has been able to change a game as much as he could. He could do it all. He was a hit-up, lead-up player. He could take a pack mark. He could... split you down the middle and hurt you badly, but he was the best footballer I ever saw.
Well, he did things that other players physically weren't capable of doing, didn't he? The thing he used to do that I always looked at and thought, no one else can do that, was like the snap over the shoulder from 50 metres out. You know, because that required the amount of power contained in that physique was phenomenal.
No, he was a special player.
Doug, you mentioned Wolsey, and when you talk to Wolsey now... and you spent 4 years at Fitzroy and then four at Collingwood. We'll obviously spend a lot of time talking about those years as well. You talk to Wolsey now, and wherever his football journey's taken him, there's a special fondness for Fitzroy that I think is reserved for Fitzroy. He has a different feeling about Fitzroy than any of the other clubs that he has had, even as a great player where he played. Do you understand why he holds that feeling? You were there while he was there. Do you get why it was such a special place for the people who were there at the time?
I think it was the reason that the players were there. You know, they weren't there for money. Mm. There were probably higher profile clubs. But I think there was a bond that he created with those players, and it was all based on respect. I mean, you listen to him speaking about guys like Purdy and Roosey, Matty Rendell, who he adored.
Gary Wilson.
And yeah, even guys like Ross Thornton.
Yeah.
You know,
Scotty Clayton.
He adores those guys.
Yeah.
So I don't know that those bonds exist in the game anymore.
I wonder what you two think. If they had won that, if Fitzroy win that flag that year, this is a hypothetical I've never asked, and maybe you've had these conversations before, but if they had won that flag, do you reckon Fitzroy's still around?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I've got no doubt. And, you know, the real tragedy of Fitzroy moving on 13 years or whatever is that had they been able to cling on for another couple of years, the AFL changed their whole philosophy on mergers after the Fitzroy North one was sort of not panned out the way it was and the Hawthorn Melbourne one was thwarted. They changed their whole philosophy and the TV money started to come in and they could have been saved had they hung on another 24 months, but similarly, I agree with that. I think, and it wasn't just 83, they were unlucky too.
Oh, no, it was
1981, beat Essendon in the elimination final, come from seven goals down against Collingwood in the first semi, and then Ross Brewer kicks one over his head and they lost that by a point. And there's so many ifs and buts about that period for Fitzroy. You hesitate to use the word tragedy, but in a football sense, I think what happened to Fitzroy was a tragedy.
Does it sadden you, Doug? Look, you made a significant contribution in a relatively short period of time, i.e. over the life of a football club. But you look back now, does it sadden you that, what happened to the footy club and the way it was wound up?
Oh, absolutely. I think in 86, we had a meeting with Leon Wigo and we all decided, we're going to to Brisbane.
Yep.
That got knocked on the head at board level. you know, 2 weeks later, we're at Festival Hall, and I can remember four of us on the corner of the flag, walking around, and people throwing money into this flag to try and keep us afloat. And I can remember a little old lady coming over. She put her coins in. She put her cash in.
Yeah.
Next trip around, she put her coins in. Then she come back, tapped me on the shoulder and said, I've thrown my key in, my house key with my change. I mean, there were some really dedicated Fitzroy supporters, and they gave everything that just weren't enough.
So did an experience like that sort of change how you felt about it? I know the players wanted to go to Brisbane, but did any after that sort of think, we need to stay here for these people, or what was the feeling?
We didn't control that.
Yeah.
You know, we were the footballers, but you knew that there was a really tough decisions being made. It was just sad that when they went to Brisbane that we lost the contact with the original Fitzroy. You know, for me, I look at Brisbane and I just don't have that empathy for them.
Mm.
You know, the Fitzroy that I knew withered and died, and the Brisbane that exists today is a totally different entity.
And you know what? That's a good point because, you know, if Brisbane Football Club people are listening, no club has worked. Sydney's a bit the same, and they've had more success, but I know that they have worked so hard to maintain the Fitzroy connection, but you can't, can you? I mean, it's two states away. It's an entirely different culture, and over time, it just gets swallowed up by the bigger entity.
My business is right on the border of the old Fitzroy and Collingwood zones, so I get them all in all the time. And the one thing that's consistent with the old Fitzroy people, is that they didn't forgive, they didn't move on.
Mm.
They come back a little bit when they had their period of success, but they're bitter and twisted about it still.
And it's a Drummond Golf Store you've got in Preston, and it's obviously a great place to go. If you're not here because we're going to do a free plug for the business, but it's obviously a great place to go if you need any equipment or coaching tips or anything you need. That's a great place to go. But they would find you, wouldn't they? I imagine people who feel that way would seek out old Fitzroy players, particularly players who played through that period, and it would be hard to stop having that conversation, I imagine. It's an opportunity that they would very much relish to take advantage of.
I think I'm just a tool to vent.
Right.
They come in and they spill it out on the table. There's quite a bit of bitterness with them, but just got to move on.
JYB, Rowan Connolly here for Des Dowling, Vic Metro Super Rules, Footy for Fun, bringing it to you. What happened at the end of, to get to Collingwood? We'll talk about their approach to you in a moment. But why did it come to an end at Fitzroy? We're just talking in the ad break. Your last year, first half of the year on fire. You must have been leading the goal kick. You must have been leading the goal kicking in the VFL. You must have been leading the VFL goal kicking at the time.
Yep.
Halfway through the year.
Yep.
So what happened?
David Parkin had a setup that allowed me to match up against bigger guys. Plenty of space. And as a small, fast lead-up forward, I had an advantage. Halfway through the year, we lost a few of our midfielders who delivered the ball well. It was a wet year that year, and my form dropped off as well. And the game plan sort of imploded. Went to Parco and discussed, maybe when it's getting a bit tight, push me up and give me a run on the ball so I can get a bit of feel. Parco was pretty determined to continue with that setup.
Yep.
And, as a result, end of that year, I went to him and said, listen, I find it hard to play that role. What are the options? And he was determined to play the next year that way as well. Mm. So I thought that, that there was going to be a parting of the ways.
Well, we should just give the details. 35 goals from the first seven games, and here's the tale of the tape. 5 goals, 5 goals, 4-7-3-4-7. 2 bags of 7, 2 bags of 5, 2 bags of 4. It's pretty handy for a guy who's, what was your height?
5'9".
Right. Is it still 5'9"? Or
five,
have you shrunk?
Half.
Yeah. You do shrink. You do shrink.
So the Collingwood, you've reached this impasse at Fitzroy. Did you then, through, I don't know whether you had a manager back in the day, you did have a manager at the day? No. So did you put the feelers out, or were there people already coming to you?
Oh, I had a number of clubs. I think Wolsey was at Carlton, and he approached me. Tommy Hafey, who was at Sydney, approached me. And Mickey Malthouse, who was at Footscray at the time, approached me as well. But I can remember coming home and saying, you know, I think we're going to have a change to my wife, Carol. And she said, you're right. What do you think? I said, well, I don't mind where we go as long as I don't end up at Collingwood.
Did you really say that?
Yeah, I did.
And what is that based on, a childhood sort of hatred?
No, it was based on the last game I played at Fitzroy and being smacked over the head by a feral Collingwood supporter with an umbrella. So
no, what happened there? You're going to tell that story.
I just had an altercation with one of the Shore boys.
Oh, funny about that. Yeah.
And I was dragged off the ground by Parko, and as I walked off the ground to the dugout, I thought this little old lady was going to say something nice to me. I went across and bang.
See, that'd be a major incident nowadays. We'd be talking about that for 4 days. That'd be all over the place.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you're there and you're not going to play for Collingwood, but you end up playing for Collingwood. How did they get you?
Oh, come home one night, I was pretty much training on my own at that stage, and there was a whole heap of luxury cars parked outside the front of my home. And
scary looking luxury cars, like tinted black window and all that sort of stuff? Or...
And walked inside, and here's the Collingwood board sitting in my lounge room. And from there, they just ghosted me. In particular, Alan McAllister just didn't let up, so...
Hang on. I've got to go back. So the whole Collingwood board, the Collingwood board is in your lounge room making a pitch to you.
I had a quick word to the wife about what I thought of this this setup. But Al knew that, you know, I was heavily influenced, I suppose, by my wife, and he worked that angle. So he schmoozed her for a couple of months, got to know her, and ended up on the board there. And I just thought if they made that sort of effort, and Al was so determined, then there had to be something there that. And that's why I ended up at Collingwood.
So the board was there. Was Lee Matthews there, or any of the football department?
No. Lee didn't go out of his way to to have to make an impression, but the board certainly did. Yeah.
When you decided and the announcement was made that you're leaving, how was that the reaction from the Fitzroy boys? Because you've talked, the unity was one of the great strengths of that group. Did you get any sort of blowback from any of the Fitzroy boys from that?
I can remember Bernie Quinlan, who was two people who, if I was running into an open goal, I'd prefer to pass to rather than kick a goal myself. One was Peter Dacos, and one was the master, Bernie. Mm-hmm. So I can remember Bernie at the end of 87. That was his final year, and he was an assistant coach. I can remember Bernie coming up to me and saying just how bitterly disappointed he was that I wasn't going to be there next year, and I could just got that sense that it was just choking him up. So that was tough.
So you felt like you let him down.
I did.
Yeah. That would have been tough. Yeah.
So, you know, there's obvious differences between Fitzroy and Collingwood in terms of resources and whatever. What your first impressions of Collingwood?
Well, the first impression was at Fitzroy we had to sign in our training Guernsey. Sign it in, sign it out.
Oh, no.
You're getting the picture? And then I got to Collingwood the first night, and there was a pair of boots, two pairs of shorts, a tracksuit, full set of kit. So I've grabbed the kit, trained in it. Then I've taken it back to the property steward, Billy Cook, and I said, there it is. And he said, what do you mean? So, yeah, there was a world of difference in the resourcing and just had a different feel about it.
Yeah. It was an interesting time for Collingwood too on the field, because they were going through a bit of a transition process, and all those younger players who would become the basis of that 1990 Premiership side were coming through. What did you think their on-field prospects looked like at that stage?
Well, I can remember my first conversation with Lee. Lee was confident that he had to rebuild the side a little bit. He needed youth, he needed run, and he also needed, what he was looking for me was somebody who could play up the field, drift down and kick goals. So he'd already mapped out this pathway to success, and Lee was really good at finding, you know, the people to be able to deliver what he wanted. So.
And it was pretty, so in 87, it was a bit of a rebuilding year, and they finished well down the ladder that year, the Pies.
Yep.
But I, funnily enough, I remember the last game of that season they played Essendon, who were also no good, and they really played well and won the game. But 88, I know they got knocked out in straight sets in the finals, but the curve was pretty quick upwards, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, we went out in two games. The year after, we went out in the first semi as well. But you could just get a sense where we were heading. But you also had a sense of pressure when you got to the finals, because there was this urban myth about the Collywobbles I really didn't think about much until I got there. And that pressure you could feel.
Really? Was it spoken about around the place?
Never spoken about, but I mean, you didn't have to speak about it. Everybody else in Melbourne and Australia was.
So it was a phenomenon. The Collywobbles were such, and it was an urban myth, but it was a real phenomenon. There wasn't a single person with an interest in football that wasn't aware of the Collywobbles.
Well, so much so that there were ceremonies at the end of it to try and to get rid of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that first year, we have to get to break, but we'll, just to tidy up, that first year when Rowan describes it, you went out in straight sets in 88.
Yeah.
Did you, you know, pack up that season at the end of it, your first year at Collingwood? Do you remember thinking, gee, maybe there is a bit of something that this footy club needs to get rid of if we're going to go where we think we can go?
The first day I walked in the door, guys like Tony Shaw, Banksy, Dakes, who had actually lived through those finals campaigns where they lost, they were on us from the word go. And to go through a year where I think we finished third or fourth, and then we went out in two, the pressure just started to
build. Can you remember what they said to you, like when they addressed that with you?
Well, they were always short when we got to those games, and you know they wouldn't allow us to celebrate too much because they'd been through that and thought that they were almost over the line, and they knew what to look for, and a lot of us who had played finals for the first time didn't. So, yeah, you could sense this pressure that was just underlying all the time.
Rowan Connolly's here for Des Dowling. I've got to just mention Gilsey in Mill Park off the SMS machine, Doug. I bought a golf club off Doug Bowick just so I could go into the shop and say g'day to him. He didn't even need it, Millsy. I didn't even need the stupid thing, but I just went into your Drummond store there in Preston to say g'day. There you go.
They're the sort of customs I like.
So once upon a time, a footballer would buy a pub to get people through and trade off the sort of name. Nowadays, you just get a golf shop.
We're licensed.
Well, that's a thriving business now at Drummond stores and other golf houses around the place, isn't it? The simulators and the stuff you can get up to these days.
Yeah, it's just a great way of actually introducing people to the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good pathway for kids and women and people who are time poor to enjoy golf.
Do you have to be a good golfer or an adequate golfer at the very least to own a Drummond golf store?
Oh, you got to be a gun. They made the exception with me.
Hey, just 78 at Mooney goes.
Just before we get on to the memories of 1990, there's an SMS someone saying Collingwood v Carlton round 14, 1988, best home and away game I've ever seen. Now, if I'm correct, that was Sosa's mark, and Craig Starcevich kicked the last three goals of the game, got you guys over the line. Do you remember that?
Wasn't Craig Starcevich to the ladder for Sos?
He was. Yeah. He was.
Was he?
My word. So he played a big role in that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I reckon that's I was there that day, and I reckon that's exactly how it played out. So it wasn't the greatest home. You can never be part of the greatest home and away game of all time when the team you barrack for, or in these cases, play with, lose the actual game.
I don't agree with that. I've spoken to a lot of North supporters who agree with me that the 94 preliminary final, North Melbourne Geelong, is the greatest game of all time.
Yeah, it was a fair game of
Can you remember the crowds we used to get to Waverley Park?
Oh, yeah,
of course.
Carlton Collingwood games?
Yeah.
Well, you might have played. There was a day out at Waverley. I should check my years here, but there was a day you might have missed it by a year. Hawthorn played Collingwood at Waverley. I think there were 92.
Oh, that was 81. That was Queen's birthday,
Queen's
81.
Queen's birthday, yeah. I was getting my decades.
Essendon Collingwood had drawn a record crowd there about 3 weeks before. And this was the thing, though, about crowds in most days. You'd just get these spontaneous, huge crowds.
Yeah,
and that Hawthorn Collingwood one came out of nowhere, and the health department absolutely cracked it.
That's right, they did too.
Because it was 20,000 over the capacity.
Can you remember feeding off that, Doug? I mean, you were you seemed to play your footy on a high emotional edge. You got in, seemed to rise to the moment often. Can you remember using that Collingwood crowd as seething as it was back in the day to your advantage at times?
There was no question that as a Fitzroy player, when you played at Vic Park, that was crushing.
Mm.
You know, the way that they supported their own. My main memory of crowd was the day we ran out for the grand final. Just the noise, it just compressed you.
Yeah, right.
Just made you feel like you had a weight in your shoulders. It was that real.
I've heard people talk about this, and they talk about it like that it has a physical impact on them, that they can feel it somehow.
Like a weight.
Right.
It was unbelievable.
Okay, so I'm sure you've got a million questions about this, but equally, when you kick the goal that seals it, like you did in 90, were you in the moment enough to be aware of what that felt like?
I could just remember the relief. And Banksy handballed it to me. I fumbled it back to Banksy. He got rid of it, gave it back to me. I snapped the goal, and then I thought that might have been enough. And I went up to Banksy, and I said, I think we're home. And Dennis just gave me a spray.
I bet he did.
Because he'd lived through a couple of those occasions where he thought he was there with Collingwood in finals, and they failed, so he gave me a big spray, and that was a 23-minute mark of the last quarter.
Yeah, it was a weird last quarter too, because Essendon were absolutely shot to ribbons, to be honest. I mean, they just, you talk to Tim Watson about that, and they were gone. But the Collingwood crowd as well sort of refused to, they were all like your teammates were, Doug. You know, that whole, you talked before about the expectation and the disappointment and the Collingwoods. Lee Matthews was the perfect person to be coaching that club at that time, wasn't he? And famous stories about grand final day, and you guys walked into the rooms and there was absolutely no decorations or anything. It was just like normal match day.
Oh, absolutely. It was just cold and stark, and it was just another day. I can remember the thing that I remember the most was that we hadn't decided on the last person to pull on the Guernsey, and Shane Kerrison, Paul Hawke and Ronnie McKeon.
Yeah.
All three of them were there, and they all started to strip. And just, you know, to set that up, and for, you know, two of those boys to miss out, I've never seen anybody more disappointed and shattered than Ronnie that day.
So that took place in the rooms on game day.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie had played in the second semi-final too, hadn't he?
And played well all year.
Yeah.
That's pretty unusual. That's pretty unusual, isn't it? I mean, to leave it so late and actually have the two guys that aren't going to play,
But that's Lee. I mean, it's not about the emotion. It's about getting the job done and getting the best fit that's going to get the result.
And it happened. Wow. It was par for the course in those days. I've never forgotten the story about Chris Langford, who'd played all year for Hawthorn in 84. And he got left out similarly for the grand final in 84. He left the ground.
That's right.
And went sat on a beach Sorrento.
He did too. We're going to leave a lot of stuff behind here. Simon Atkins was in here a couple of months ago, and he remembers, amongst all the things he did, almost most fondly being part of that State of Origin team in 1990. You were part of that Tassie team that beat Victoria, having been shunned, really, for way too long, Tassie. And it's still happening to this day. Where does that sit in all the things you did in footy, being part of that team? Where does that sit?
Well, when I grew up, the state team was picked out of the South, out of the TFL. So it was never something that was available to young Northern Tasmanian footballers.
You're a Launceston boy, yeah.
So to actually play against Victoria at North Hobart in front of 15,000 usually very conservative Tasmanians going off their face and beating Victorians, seeing, you know, I think Parko was the coach.
He was the coach,
and
yep.
Teddy Whitten was beside him.
Yep.
That was amazing. That was just under the premiership, it really was.
Does it sadden you that we don't have a Tasmanian AFL team and yet we've got one in Western Sydney?
No, the game is really in good shape, and I think it's in good hands. Tasmania just can't support that sort of investment.
Would it ever unify itself to the degree that it might be able to?
I'm sure at some point in time it'll happen, but yeah. Maybe when Tassie's got a million people.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you find the game today? You're a Collingwood Life member. You go every week. You see a lot of it. Do you, forgetting the emotional attachment, do you like football as it's played today?
Yeah, I love the game.
Yeah?
I love the game. I mean, I can remember I was a Carlton supporter. I can remember watching Sid Jackson because he was the only one that stood out back then in black and white TV, you know, with the anklets. And I can remember that era. The era that I played, it was brutal, but getting towards a more professional game. But the game now, the skills, the fitness, the tactics, the way they use the ball. I mean, go back to a game in the 70s. It was a different game, but we didn't hit a target for quarter and a half.
You're being a bit hard on yourself.
But I do enjoy the game. What I do miss about the modern game is maybe having an opponent for the whole game.
Yep.
Yeah.
And being able to judge your game against, I had 15, you had 15. We had to fight for each one of those possessions. I had a shot on goal. I was better than you over the course of the game. I don't see that.
Do you miss the craft of being a positional footballer?
Well, what's a
well, it's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. But back in your day, you were a half-forward flanker who could be used pinch-hitting out square or be thrown through mid. But ostensibly, you're a half-forward, like a high goal-kicking half-forward flanker.
But the game was set up. You know, I mean, get the ball, take it wide, channel it back in through centre half forward. The half-forward flankers would start with the centre half forward, work up, then get to the fall of the ball, try and crumb, and get a shot on goal. So when does that ever happen in the modern game?
Encouragingly, though, I think this is the first season for a number of years we haven't had that now seemingly annual debate about the health of the game.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think it's been a bit better this year. Doug, that's an hour done and dusted. It's been a joy meeting you. Congratulations on everything you're able to do in your career and being obviously a premiership player. A Collingwood Life member of that footy club, member of the Tassie Hall of Fame. There's a lot that you achieved in your shortish 8 years at the VFL, AFL level. You achieved a lot and packed a lot in. It's been great fun having you. If anybody needs a golf stick, Drummond Golf and Preston's a place to go, clearly.
Thanks for asking me in.
And if you're a Fitzroy supporter, he's more than happy to give you hours upon hours just reminiscing about the good old days.